Welcome to the Gambling Gauchos. I'm Rob Broyle. He is Money Mainville. Kyle Jacobson out tonight. He just received a call from Meredith Scheffler, so he had to run off from the Gauchos taping. So good news for the Schefflers. That is happening tonight. Scotty Scheffler also won the Masters just ahead of our friend, our pal, Ludwig Åberg. Åberg, who never corrected anyone until like his final month in Lubbock, that his name was pronounced differently in Sweden. So we heard Åberg, 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 all this weekend across ESPN and CBS. Finished in second. Thoughts on his finish, money, and his future, because it really seems bright to me.
Yeah, I'll be honest. The Masters is one of the only weekends where I will sit down and watch golf pretty much for hours on end, day after day, Thursday through Sunday. I'm tuned in. Obviously, a little bit of a added bonus this year because you've got a Red Raider making his first major appearance, and he played a hell of a weekend. You know, after the front nine today, was in a position where he was tied with Scheffler for the lead, and Scheffler is insane. Like, I will say that first and foremost. Like, he's clearly the best golfer in the world right now to me. His record over his last couple of tournaments proved that. I think he's won three out of the last four, and the one that he didn't win, he finished in second. So he's on a tear right now. But in terms of Ludwig, like, had a really good front nine today and then double bogeyed on 11. And that was tough because he even had two pars after that, but two birdies, after that. But yeah, that double kind of put him in a hole in terms of chasing that lead. But I mean, I'm a big no morals victory guy, but to finish second at Augusta in your first major appearance is one hell of a way to get on the stage. And, you know, obviously I think Scheffler gets a lot of the attention, rightfully so, because he is kind of the peak of the sport right now. But you saw a lot of people over the weekend starting to talk about Ludwig, and that's exciting, man, because now you've got, you know, three Red Raiders who are really starting to become, you know, keystone parts of their sports. Obviously, Young dealing with an injury right now, but obviously you've got Patrick Mahomes, and now you've got Åberg kind of making a name for himself this weekend, and I think that's going to continue. Nance seemed to love him all weekend, had a lot of good comments on his play, the way he carried himself. I mean, even watching today on Sunday, being in the position that he was in, just looked super calm, had a smile on his face, eating snacks, giving fist bumps to fans. That's pretty awesome to see, especially at his age. So what a first weekend at a majors for him, and excited about what the future could look like. So I think it's really, really bright.
It feels like he was at Texas Tech 4 years ago with how much he's done in his pro career. He was a Red Raider last spring and has went out and won a Ryder Cup, now second in the Masters this weekend with a $2.1 million paycheck. It's not all about the money, but it's about the money. He's also an Adidas athlete. Texas Tech very soon will be an Adidas school. I would assume there's some strong crossover there that will happen with him and Mr. Mahomes. Just pretty incredible what he's done this early in his career. He's 24 and had a prolific collegiate career. And in his first full year post-college is doing this on the grandest of stages. Pretty special. Pretty incredible.
I think I saw a tweet today that said he, with the win today, he had amassed over $9 million in pro earnings. And I mean, like you mentioned, he was just a Red Raider, man. Yeah. That's insane.
I think he's top 10 in the world. He will be for sure now. I think he was ninth coming into the weekend. Probably top five by the end of the year if he places in a couple of more tournaments. Good run. Pretty good run with Happy Gilmore, too, on the horizon. See if we can get a Ludwig Åberg I've said that for 5 years now. It's hard to get over it. Ober, whatever it is. Shout out to him. Really, really good stuff. And Scheffler, potentially the weekend of his life. Basically going coast to coast since Friday in the Masters, his second green jacket, and having his first kid all in one weekend. I mean, that's pretty special. That's pretty special.
Yeah, that's going to be one to remember for sure.
You won't have any trouble remembering that birthday. It's a Masters weekend. Masters will help him keep track of that. Let's see. Any other golf thoughts? Any other Masters thoughts from this weekend? He looked pretty... Ober looked pretty comfortable in the wind, I will say. What was that? Saturday? Friday? Whenever it's super windy, he looked pretty comfortable. The Rawls prepared him for that. Otherwise, did you do any pools? Did you make any bets? Did you have any picks?
I did not, no. I should have laid some cash on Oberg, but did not. But I don't know enough about golf to part with my hard-earned money to put it on the line.
We made picks on Wednesday, I guess. I did pick Scheffler in a draft, but I got him second. So he wasn't the first pick overall. But I don't think I had anybody. My other three picks, I don't think were in the cut. So I took a... I mean, it was really easy to pick Scheffler. But I don't know that I got anybody else in the top 20. So I'm not going to brag too much about that. All right. It has been a while since we recorded. We missed on Wednesday. Circumstances out of our control. I will say this. A lot happened in the last week since last Sunday. And when we talked about it on Sunday, we talked about, you and I, the Arkansas coaching search and how terrible it was going and how brutally striking out the Arkansas AD and donors were, even though they had all this money. And then immediately after we recorded early on Sunday, immediately after we recorded last Sunday, legitimate reports come out because there had been leaks earlier in the day that I ignored that I thought were fake. Legitimate reports come out that John Calipari is in the mix, and not only in the mix, the candidate for Arkansas. That changed the whole dynamic of the Arkansas search and opens up a ginormous job for Kentucky. Well, Kentucky sets its eyes after the finality of Calipari to Arkansas, in which there was some strangeness, if you agree, at the end of that Arkansas search where John Calipari, I think, overextended his hand and said, Kentucky will match. I'll have the opportunity to stay at Kentucky. And Kentucky said no. That's what I felt happened there. And maybe they mutually wanted to part anyways. But I don't know if Arkansas was Calipari's dream job here. Anyways, Calipari goes to Arkansas. And then you have a wide open job at Kentucky. And that lands on Scott Drew. And I said to text message groups, to Discord servers, to anyone who would listen, there's no chance McCasland goes to Baylor. And then the Scott Drew stuff heated up. And there was Trilly Donovan posting on his own Discord server and leaking that McCasland had been reached out to. And then I start hearing from other people, this is happening. This has been said. There's a meeting planned. I'll tell you what, I got pretty nervous. And then Scott Drew turns him down. And we end up with Mark Pope from BYU returning home to Kentucky. But that was a whirlwind week. And it only left me with more unease on McCaslin for the future if that Baylor job opens up. But I will say this. Scott Drew turning down Kentucky, they're not going to go back to him. And I don't know that there's many other jobs that could lure you away from your home in the world of college basketball than Kentucky. So on one hand, I'm a little more nervous about McCaslin's future here at Texas Tech, even though nothing was quantitatively said that he would leave if that job opened up. But on the other hand, I think Scott Drew is a lifer there at Baylor, so I'm not really worried in the realist sense.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think I almost feel the opposite way. I think I feel a lot better in terms of McCaslin's future for the next 10 years at Texas Tech. If he keeps winning, if Texas Tech will have him for that long, if, you know, he doesn't decide to go off the deep end in his personal life, which would not be the first time that has happened.
For a Texas Tech coach, not for McCaslin.
Correct. Yes, no. I should reiterate that. But yeah, man, like Calipari obviously has those ties with the Tyson family. They had obviously, I think it's fair to say, they had swung and missed on some candidates. And, you know, kind of looking at Calipari and what happened this year, what's happened the last couple of years, like I think he's 1-3 in his last tournament, in his last four tournaments, with a couple of really tough first round losses baked in there, obviously this year being Oakland. And then, you know, thinking about Scott Drew, it's like, okay, if he's going to get pulled away from Baylor, program that has proven their loyalty to him, you know, that's built an arena for him, I would guess, I don't think there's been anything reported on this, but I would guess that he leveraged the Louisville opening a little bit to maybe get some more things going in his favor, whether that be NIL or a contract extension down the line. I think that certainly has to play a factor if you're good at your business. But yeah, I think it would be naive to say, you know, if Baylor comes open, that McCaslin wouldn't have interest. And I also think you have to think, you know, would Mac Rhodes hear Scott Drew out on his way out the door? And if Scott Drew says, hey, I think you've got this guy in Lubbock who can take this program and keep it going, what we've been doing, I think you'd be silly to think that Mac Rhodes wouldn't hear Scott Drew out on that. And if there's a guy that I think would get a recommendation from Scott Drew, it's Grant McCaslin. Like, they are very, very close. I think Scott Drew thinks very highly of Grant McCaslin. I think obviously you could include Jerome Tang to some degree in that conversation, John Jacobs in some degree to that conversation. Obviously, Jacobs goes to FAU this offseason.
Yeah, Jacobs more so in like 5 years, maybe after that experience.
I think, you know, the head coaching experience does play a big part in that. But yeah, I was kind of thinking, like, man, if we end up losing a head coach after 1 year, all because SMU fired a guy who said he doesn't like the smell of the Lubbock air whenever he gets off the plane, like, that's just going to be the worst domino effect of coaching changes that I can remember in recent years. But none of this matters because Kentucky, I think it's fair to say that they whiffed on Scott Drew.
Yeah.
Like, he turned them down. I think that's very clear and obvious. They sent a plane for his family. His family went, they checked it out. Maybe they said, hey, you know, this isn't for us. Or maybe they said, hey, we do want to go to Lexington. And Scott Drew in his prayer closet said, you know, God's telling me to stay at Baylor. Yeah. But whatever happened, I mean, it's hard to see Scott Drew changing jobs until he retires. And he's young, man.
Yeah.
Like, he's 53, I think. So that only gives him a couple of years on Grant McCaslin, because I think Grant McCaslin's 47.
I think 5 years, 5-6 years.
Yeah. So there's not a huge gap there. So I imagine Scott Drew will be coaching until he gets tired of it, which doesn't look like it'll happen anytime soon. So very, very crazy week. A lot. The ripple effect could have kept going, and it could have affected your program. That's very fair to say.
The only other like huge ripple effect I can remember. Now, USC to SMU is wild. That set off Arkansas, Kentucky, nearly Baylor, BYU. I mean, that is far-reaching. But if you remember the Joe Golden ACU Wildcats beating Shaka Smart's Texas Longhorns, set off a pretty wicked chain of events as well. I think every head coach in Texas changed that year, except for maybe Jamie Dixon. It seemed like, and I guess Scott Drew, because of that job opening. UTA lost their head coach because he went to the Texas staff. UTEP's head coach went to the Texas staff. Joe Golden got the UTEP job because Rodney Terry left. Shaka Smart obviously goes to Marquette afterwards, after he was fired. Chris Beard leaves Texas Tech for Texas. That was a wild one. Just from losing an NCAA tournament to ACU, but this one, I mean, Kentucky, Arkansas, SMU, USC, BYU, and then whoever BYU hires, all in one breath, is just a crazy domino effect. Just incredible.
Yeah, and I think it may stop at BYU, because I think the leading favorite there is an assistant at Utah. So, or I've heard Barrett Peary's name mentioned, but he's also an assistant coach. So maybe it'll stop at BYU. But yeah, it's been a cycle, man. And I even remember the year that Beard left. That was the year Roy Williams retired. And I think he announced his retirement on the morning that Chris Beard took the Texas job.
Yeah.
It was April Fool's, I believe.
Yep. Because everyone's like, oh, you should have waited.
And I was thinking, man, like if Beard really wanted to, he could take that, or he could go for that UNC job. You know, maybe they had their eyes set on Hubert Davis already, but you know, kind of the feeling was, you know, when Beard reached that pinnacle of success was, hey, if he wants to take a Kentucky, Duke, UNC, Kansas, if one of those jobs comes open, maybe he's put himself in a position to do that. And then obviously Texas fires Shaka, he takes that job. But yeah, I mean, crazy cycle for the last couple of weeks.
Did you appreciate, like, think it was cool, the opening presser for, or the pep rally for Mark Pope getting out of the bus with the 96 championship team, and then he had the trophy at the end? Did you see that?
I did see it. I'm conflicted.
Yeah, it was all right.
I think the nostalgia aspect is cool, and like there's certainly a play there to be like, this is where we've been, this is where we're going to keep going. But also, it just feels very like, let's really buy into the fact that this is one of our guys.
Yeah, it's pandering.
Because the initial reaction to that hiring was so bad.
Yes.
It was so bad. And like, I don't think Mark Pope is a great hire. Like, I don't think it's a home run hire for a program like Kentucky. But I also don't think it's a terrible hire. Like, it could play out. Like, I think the biggest thing with Mark Pope is he doesn't have an NCAA tournament win yet. He's got two first round exits on his resume. But he certainly like runs a very good brand of basketball. BYU's been fun to watch the last couple of years. Their offense was terrific this year. I think they were first in the country in 3-point percentage, but it's also like, okay, this guy's getting destroyed in the public eye. Because obviously we whiffed on a couple of these big ticket names. Now Rick Pitino's doing a video like pledging his allegiance to Mark Pope. Mark Pope's getting out of a bus with the championship team. It's just,
yeah,
It's a little bit PR-y to me.
Yeah. It's like when the babyface champion in the WWE shows up to Lexington, Kentucky and says, "How are all the beautiful people in Lexington, Kentucky?" And everyone cheers. Like, it's just straight up pandering to the crowd. Now, should you do a little bit of that? Yeah. Why not? There's that kind of stuff at every opening press conference. Calipari tried to, what do they call it? Call the pigs. Joey did the Raider power. Matt Wells tried to say tortilla. I mean, there's a lot of that every single opening press conference. I just thought it was funny to have the trophy in your hand. That was the bit that made me laugh. But it worked. And Kentucky's hyped. That fan base is voracious. And that gym was packed. People talk about different jobs and different fan bases. And the Texas Tech fan base is incredible on game day, in basketball, in conference play. But they don't have that kind of showing for a coach press conference.
Yeah, I remember Mark Adams opening presser and being like, "Dang, this thing is pretty packed." Yeah. But then you see like Kentucky and they're like, there's like 15,000 people there at least. Like there were people that couldn't get into the arena.
Yeah, pretty unreal.
Like that's insane. But then again, it's Kentucky basketball. Like it's a league of its own.
Yeah.
I think that's fair to say. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how this kind of goes in the next couple of years, because now you've done this kind of PR move to kind of get some buy-in, get some excitement around the hire, which I think is totally fair to do. But now where do expectations sit? And obviously, like, no guy is walking into a job and being like, "All right, this is going to take us a little while. Like, please be patient with me, even if we suck next year." Like, no. You're going to get on the podium and be like, "We're going to win championships here. That's what we're here to do." But I do think it's fair to say that like it might take him some time. I mean, his philosophy at BYU has been doing more with less. I think they've got the highest rated recruit in program history that was supposed to come in next season. Who knows what will happen with that? But like, he's got like 25-year-old freshmen balling out for him. His best player was coming off the bench this year. Ali Khalifa, you know, supposedly doing some spy work at Louisville before he inevitably commits to Kentucky here in a few days. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see kind of how this first year goes, you know, what talent he takes with him, how they translate to that level and that degree of expectations that comes from putting on that Kentucky jersey, because it is certainly a different level.
I will say this, though. Today in college basketball, more than any other sport, more than any other era, it is the opportunity is available to succeed quickly because of the transfer portal and because of NIL, especially at Kentucky. Does that mean it's obvious that you'll succeed immediately? Does that mean it's easy? Does that mean it's likely or that he should? No, none of that's true, but it's available. The opportunity is there, and it will be expected at Kentucky, just like it would be expected at Kansas and Duke and North Carolina and, hell, even Texas Tech. You wanted some quick success. I think if somebody took over Kentucky football from Stoops, you would say, "All right, well, let's give him a couple years." You're certainly having a pretty long leash for Joey McGuire here at Texas Tech, but college football is just a different world. So I think those expectations would be there early, but we'll see what happens. I think Mark Pope's a good hire. I do. Of all the hires, I think that's a pretty good hire. Now, when you get $8 million from Arkansas and a promise of $7 million in NIL per year, it's hard to fudge that up. I would assume Calipari can put together a roster. It'll be interesting to see what his transfer portal classes look like, because he's gone after high school kids mostly, but that'll be an interesting experiment. Calipari at Arkansas.
Yeah, I'm intrigued to see how both of them go, because I think both of their careers are kind of headed in opposite directions. Like, Cal has reached the heights of college basketball before. He'll be a Hall of Famer. Mark Pope, on the other hand, is on the younger side, still doesn't have a tournament win attached to his name, but is running a style of basketball that I think has caught the eye of a lot of people that like to kind of view the game in that way, like to see the systems and the schemes and the way that they play out. But yeah, like, even thinking about transfer portal stuff, like, both of these guys now have to completely rebuild rosters, because both of their rosters have gotten destroyed. And like with Cal, it's been a lot of one and done NBA blue chip recruits. Certainly he acquired a couple of good transfers along the way to kind of plug some holes. Like, he got Trey Mitchell, which, by the way, the bit that Irrational does, where, like, apparently, like, every coach Trey Mitchell has played under is gone now. That is crazy to me.
Yeah.
But, like, Trey Mitchell, Oscar Tshiebwe, like, he's had some guys that he's brought in and have played well. But yeah, it's been five stars. And then Arkansas has been, like, king of the transfer portal the last couple of years under Muss. So it's going to be interesting, especially this offseason, to see kind of what approach is from each guy, because we're so late in the cycle that unless you can get some guys to flip their NLIs and, you know, come to your program now, which I'm sure there will be a few, but it's going to be interesting.
Yeah. And, you know, a coach like Cal, you might want to go after some high school kids that are already on campus or have signed those NLIs, not NILs, NLIs. Pope, it'll be interesting to see what he does. Speaking of rosters, we should probably get back to Texas Tech here. The Red Raiders looking to score a couple of their first transfers, a couple of guys listed as visits. I believe it was reported by Tobias Bass, a Bass Bomb, that the Wyoming transfer was visiting here. And then the Drake transfer is in the mix. I think it was here over the weekend, Overton. What about Overton makes you excited? And then the kid from Wyoming we've talked about briefly, but what about him makes you excited? If they do it all.
Overton's a guy I'm really, really high on. Obviously, you know, we named an entire section of the city after him, so it feels like a lock. He's got the Luke Barnwell connection from Sunrise Christian up in Kansas, so I think that's a plus as well. But, I mean, this is a guy who's a freshman, still kind of budding, but, like, came onto the scene at Duke or at Drake, and just played really, really well as a freshman. Over 11 points per game, couple of boards, one assist, but the shooting efficiencies are really good, 44% from the field, 35% from deep, 80% from the free throw line. When you watch the tape, it's really resembling a true three-level scorer. Those are becoming a little bit rarer in college basketball, a guy who, you know, can either take a pull-up jump shot from behind the line, put the ball down and take the mid-range shot, or get to the basket. To do all three of those things well is really, really hard. But I think I saw that his overall offensive profile on Synergy was in the 91st percentile last year in college basketball, which is very, very, very good. And then he's 6'5", which is a thing that gets me excited. I think it's fair to say that this staff probably wants to get a little bit longer, a little bit bigger, a little bit more athletic. And this is a guy who, even if you're looking at him from kind of the physical aspect of it and the way that he's built, definitely meets that bill. And then the other thing too is he only averaged half a turnover a game, and, you know, obviously did not have the ball in his hands a ton. Not a super high usage rate, but really took care of the basketball. And I think that's something that, you know, if you look at the guard play last year, you're thinking, okay, if we want to get better, if we want to improve, if we want to give ourselves a better chance at winning, I think you kind of have to start at efficiency at the guard level. And how does that help you win games instead of helping or hurting you in terms of losing games? So he's a guy that I'm really excited about. And I think it's fair to say, like, there should certainly be some excitement about there are things of his game that could translate up to the next level. And I think there's been, you know, I think I saw one comment about, like, something about this kind of feels like a Darion Williams type to me. And, like, obviously we have hindsight now to know that Darion Williams did not only translate his game to the Big 12, but actually was even better, which is absurd. And you're not going to do that with every transfer. But I do think, okay, this guy's a freshman, made the all-freshman team in the MVC, shot the ball really well, took care of the basketball. His advanced stats are really good, does not turn the ball over. I think defense is the one area where he's going to have some room to grow. But offensively, there's a lot of promise here.
And going from, you know, 6 foot to 6'5" at the two guard, creates something on defense. I mean, it length, passing lanes, whatever else. Especially if you're going 6'1", 6 foot at the one and the two. If you go from that to 6'2", 6'5", you're getting in somebody's passing lane if they can, you know, read it and do that. And that's a big part of this defense, is disrupting passing lanes. So it'll be interesting. And then the Wyoming kid, we talked about him defensively, step up from what you've had. It would be interesting to see what he plays, what role he would play here. If he's playing the three, is he behind Warren? Or not Warren. You said, you made me think of David Warren earlier. Williams. Is he behind him, or do they play the 3-4? Do they play together? Would all three of those guys play together? That's all the kind of stuff you have to think about. And if you get six more guys or three more guys or eight more guys, that's all stuff that you have to puzzle together too.
Yeah, with Wenzel, I think I mentioned this the last time we talked about him, but I'm actually not too hot on his defense. I think offensively is where I feel pretty good about him. But kind of a different story than Overton. Like, Overton's a guy where played really well in a lower conference as a young guy. There's promise there. Wenzel has been playing he's played four seasons, or really three, because I think he was banged up his sophomore year after redshirting, but has gotten progressively better every single year, has started every game the last two seasons, or almost every game. The shooting numbers are really good, even in terms of a career average, sitting about, you know, 37.7%. That is more than doable. And then obviously the 6'7 frame, that's something that gets you excited. Even if the defense isn't exactly where you might want it to be yet, I think that's something like length and athleticism cannot be taught. Like, it can be developed, but that takes a lot of time. If you just throw a guy who's 6'7 in and say, hey, you know, we're going to teach you defense, if you buy in, you're going to get better. I think that's really, really exciting. And so with him, I think it's probably kind of like a big three, or he plays the four if you want to go a little bit smaller. But I almost imagine that he'll kind of play an interchangeable role almost with Kerwin. I think he's got that kind of offensive game. And if you're in it's obviously going to be depending on your matchup, but if you've got a team where they've got a little bit more length than you do, I think that makes sense to say, hey, let's throw our 6'7" guy out there to kind of counteract what they've got going on offensively, instead of putting Kerwin out there, who I think is, the verdict is still out on him defensively. At least it is for me.
A couple of questions in the comment section. Mark Pope can't wait to coach on Sundays again. That's not a question. That's a statement. Mr. James says, will Kyle ever be coming back? Depends on what happens with Meredith Scheffler tonight. Are we interested in Mashburn Jr. from New Mexico? You know anything about that?
I've not heard anything. I've looked at a couple of things on his game. I don't know if you would add him if you add Overton, because they're both score first guards. Obviously, it would not hurt to have multiple guys that can score the basketball on your team. Don't want to deny that, but I do think the fit would be a little bit interesting with him next to Overton. I think you would kind of want to try and get a true point guard facilitator type guy in if you do end up landing Overton. So I haven't heard anything on Mashburn, but I think it'll be interesting to see if that does heats up, depending on what happens with Overton.
A lot of people from Kentucky obviously want Jamal Mashburn Jr. to come to Kentucky. We'll see what happens there. All right. Let's see. Texas Tech baseball also played this weekend. Do you have any other final basketball thoughts before we move on, by the way?
I don't think so. Crazy week, man.
Wild.
This was one of those weeks where it felt like 2-1. A lot going on.
Just insane. And it was, in some sense, it was really quiet for Texas Tech fans in the basketball world. Unless you're on the message boards and freaking out about Scott Drew. Otherwise, it was just an avalanche of things happening around the country. And it's not like a bunch of other teams are signing transfers either. Kansas State got one guy like a week ago. The Drake coach went to West Virginia and brought his son from Drake, who signed with West Virginia today or yesterday. But it doesn't seem, there's a kid, Arkansas kid or Alabama kid went to Texas. They're not even in the league anymore, so who cares?
Uzon to Houston. I think that was the guy you were probably going to look at.
Houston, maybe one or two guys they've gotten in and got a recommit from LJ Cryer, I believe, to come back for another season.
A lot of guys. They're a big guy, too. Emmanuel Sharp as well.
So it doesn't seem like, I guess, beyond Houston, there's a ton of movement on any roster. Nobody's filling up quickly. They're slow playing. This is, you kind of have to find the new pace. There was such a, 5-10 years ago, there was such a rhythm to the offseason. You knew what was going on. But I think coaches in the last 3 or 4 years have been trying to find the pace at which to look in the portal. There's still guys entering the portal. And you're going to have more guys enter the football portal this week. There's an intention for Cam Watts to enter the transfer portal. Him from a defensive back from Texas Tech. So you'll see more of that. But the basketball portal is not going away, and it's not going to be quick. I think we talked about June, July is when you'll rock up a roster completely. So we're in it for the long haul.
That's the thing too. Like, you don't think all these coaches moving around is changing guys' perceptions on what they think their timeline is going to be.
Oh yeah.
Like, these guys are definitely sitting back and watching and thinking, okay, I'm watching the movement, because not only if a coach moves somewhere that I respect, if he moves somewhere where there's a better spot for me, or it causes one guy in their program to transfer out, now there's the opportunity for more minutes for me. Yeah, that absolutely plays a factor in how these decisions are made. And obviously, you just had the dead period end on Thursday. So there will be some more movement now. But yeah, I mean, it's, nobody's made like a huge splash transfer, at least that I can think off the top of my head. Like, maybe the biggest one has been Tucker DeVries, and he just followed his dad. Like,
right. Yeah, nationally. And everyone, not everyone, let's say there's a certain level of guy who is looking at Arkansas, Kentucky, Texas Tech, maybe that upper to mid level of Power Six transfer. But that top level of school is looking at all the guys looking to be in the NBA. So that's the June window. And that's a trickle down and a domino, and it's going to last. It's going to be all summer, which is on one hand unfortunate, on the other gives us something to talk about all summer. So we'll be having portal talk every week.
Yeah, and I'll say this too, my last thought on basketball. You don't want to be trigger happy at this point. There are thousands of guys in the portal right now.
Yeah, quite.
There are certainly guys that you can look at right now and say, all right, I want them. Like, I'm going, putting my foot on the gas. We're getting them on campus. We're doing whatever we can to get them. But this is not the time in the off season where you're going to be landing guys who are towards the end of your bench, you know, competing for minutes next season. This is where you kind of want to be conservative. You kind of want to start thinking about your budget, how much you're spending on each guy, and thinking, all right, let's kind of lay out on big ticket players. Let's see where that gets us. And then later in the cycle, we'll start getting some of the guys that haven't gotten the calls they want. We'll rely on our eye. We'll watch the tape and we'll take flyers. But I almost think, like, I get the frustration with how quiet it's been. I get that this roster has, like, I think it's 4 scholarship players on it right now, 5 scholarship players on it right now, something like that. But I'm still of the opinion, and like, I'm not in the business of carrying anybody's water, but I'm still of the opinion that, like, I would much rather be conservative right now than kind of throwing things at a wall and waiting to see what sticks. That's how you end up with, you know, roster spots that aren't being used, NIL budget that's going down the drain, and not a lot of promise for your roster over the next couple of seasons. So, yeah, I'm very much in wait-and-see mode.
All right, speaking of wait-and-see mode, if you are in wait-and-see mode on a certain legal matter, you can call BHW Law Firm, bhwlawfirm.com. Barnett, Howard, and Williams, 3 double graduates from the great Texas Tech University, an experienced team of Fort Worth trial attorneys. They have offices in Fort Worth, Keller, and Grapevine, but they do cases all across the state of Texas. Criminal defense, personal injury, family law, Title IX, whatever you're into, they can help you out of it. They don't want you to call them, but if you have to, you can. You can find them online, bhwlawfirm.com. Starter says, will we try to get a grad transfer in football with Morton's injury bugs? I think you have the transfer. I think Cam Brown is already in. And he's, I think they said 70% completion percentage in practice. I don't know if that was live attempts or just period, because that is quite a different number. If he's 70% against wind in the skeleton, that's not great. If he's 70% in live reps against bodies, it's not bad. Good, even. We'll see. Jake Strong, Will Hammond, Cameron Brown. Brown, allegedly, according to Don Williams, has gotten the bulk of the ones reps. So, assuming he is the second quarterback in line this fall, I don't know, but allegedly, Baron Morton will be ready on July 1st when they kind of ramp things back up for the fall.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, you've got what feels to be a lot of depth at that position. Obviously, a lot of it is still unknown. Like, I think you felt good about Strong heading into last season. He gets thrown into the fire. I think it's fair to say he did not handle it well, but I mean, that's a true freshman playing Big 12 reps. It's a hard thing to do. I think it's fair to be excited about Hammond. And then you've got Brown, who kind of a gadget guy, like Tech Hoops guy was kind of talking about using him and some of the packages that like we've seen with Donovan Smith. He's got good speed, good hands. He can throw the ball well, obviously, if he's playing quarterback. But I think there's a lot there, and I think I can understand the perspective of, hey, there's still a need for like a sure thing or as close to a sure thing as you can get, because still don't really know what the verdict is on Strong, and you still don't really know what Hammond's going to be until he's out on the field. But yeah, I'm excited about Cameron Brown. I hope he gets some reps this upcoming Saturday in the spring game, because I kind of want to see what that looks like in simulated live action.
All right, Texas Tech baseball happening will continue to happen on Tuesday and Wednesday. You'll play the number one team in the world, Arkansas. With a series against Alabama this weekend. Did you see out of the left field? Did you see any of the Mississippi State Ole Miss series this weekend?
Did not.
Mississippi State's catcher is the biggest D-bag in college baseball, and I love it. And I hate it. If he was my catcher, he would be my favorite player of all time, probably. As an opposing catcher, he would be my least favorite player of all time. As a neutral observer, he's just kind of a jack wagon. Hilarious to see from the outside, though. Anyways, back to the Red Raiders. They lose this week, and they win on Friday night with Ryan Free as the starter, and then you lose another good start from Kyle Robinson. You lose a good start from Mac Hewer. About three defensive plays change the trajectory of the series. You have a dropped fly ball from Damian Bravo in the middle of game two that changed the game. Wasn't really the same after late inning runners in scoring position. You have two on, no outs today, and you cannot move those guys over into shifts and whatever else. You can't bunt. You're pounding balls into the second baseman. Nobody's moving over. You're hitting shallow fly balls, pop flies into the grass. Just not a very competitive ninth inning after getting two on. But I will say this, if you're complaining about the pitching after the first couple of weekends in Big 12 play, you can't really complain about the pitching from this weekend. It was the offense and the defense that didn't put you in a position to win, but you had great outings again from Josh Sanders, Parker Hutera. Again, Mac Hewer, Ryan Free, Josh Sanders. Did I say him? I'll say him again. The bullpen and the starters were good enough to win a series this weekend, and your offense could not get it done like they were good enough at UCF to get a series victory, and the offense could not get it done, and defensively you couldn't get it done. Just kind of an overall upsetting weekend for Texas Tech baseball, but TCU at home has been pretty good. I know their record is not good. I know they got swept at home by Oklahoma, but this is a little bit of a different baseball team. And you saw them on Saturday. That game against Texas Tech was their Super Bowl. On Saturday, they bring out Abelt. They bring out Cole Klecker to close the game. It is a shame you couldn't get it back today on Sunday. But you have an opportunity to split against Arkansas or beat Arkansas twice and be in the same position that you were in before the TCU loss, series loss, to do everything that you want to do this season. And that means get in the postseason. Maybe not win the Big 12. But I will say this, the two or three teams ahead of you right now, they are on the schedule. Oklahoma State right ahead of you. You play them in Stillwater still. Oklahoma and not Kansas. Who else is left on the schedule? Oklahoma, West Virginia, both on the schedule in Lubbock. So you go to Lawrence, you host Lubbock, you host West Virginia, and you go to Stillwater. Those four Big 12 series are ginormous now. And if you get a sweep at one of those home series, the top of the Big 12 looks way different. And if Baseball America puts out another NCAA tournament projection, you're in it right now. Because you swept Houston, because you swept Stanford, because you beat ACU twice in the last 3 weeks, and because you took one from TCU, especially if you win one against Arkansas, you're in the field. And you're back in the mix to be a top Big 12 seed, top one or two, three Big 12 seed. Now, I don't think the Big 12 is very good, but the Big 12 gets a little bit of respect, and you can kind of guarantee yourself to be in the field if you can be top four, three, two of the Big 12 in the regular season.
Arkansas got shut out today to lose the series to Alabama.
They did.
How you feel about the midweek there, the Razorbacks?
It's a really interesting series. You pitched to Tara quite a bit today. You started him in the midweek last week. I thought you would rest him to pitch again. Maybe you throw him again on Wednesday. It's pivotal. They're really good. They lost two to Alabama, I believe. I don't think they got swept. I think they won on Friday and then lost Saturday and Sunday. Mason Molina, I was watching on Saturday for an inning or two. He gave up a bomb. That's a little things. But that is a really tough series because it's a true neutral. Not true neutral. It's a true road series. It's at Baum. So That's really tough. They're number one in the RPI. They're number one in the rankings. That won't change with the loss to Alabama. It does you good to even play a team like Arkansas. Your RPI will go up this week no matter what, which is good for Texas Tech. So, great midweek opportunity, win or lose. But much prefer to win one or two. It'll be interesting to see who starts for Texas Tech. I'm not aware enough of the Arkansas pitching staff. I doubt you see Molina. You'll certainly see Hudson White at catcher, but Molina's their Saturday guy, so I don't think, unless they like pull a Micah Dallas, like A&M did a few years ago, where he was a weekend guy, and they were like, yeah, but we're playing Texas, so here's a closer appearance in the midweek for you because it's Texas and we want to win this game. I don't think you'll see that from Arkansas. I wouldn't put it over Van Horn, though. Let's see. Do we miss anything else? Can you guys play Fortnite? No. If we go no build and like duos and I can camp out a little bit and have some help, I can survive. But if we're out building and playing solos, I'm getting bottom 10. I mean, I'm dying quick.
I've played maybe two games of Fortnite my entire life.
The only reason I know anything about it is my nephews are, like, big in the Fortnite game.
I really don't play any video games except for sports video games.
Same.
And even that is kind of, like, I'm starting to get stale on it. Yeah. Like, everything's kind of feeling the same. Everything has microtransactions baked into it now, so I can't play any of the game modes that sound fun. Even like 2K now, like it's they're just microtransactions for my career, which feels backwards. Yeah. Even on Madden this year, I think you like had a limited amount of skill points, so I couldn't create like a god tier player, which is always like, if I'm going to play the game, at least reward me by, like, I'm in like season 8 with the Browns. Like, let my guy have 99 speed. Like, come on. Yeah. Won like 7 Super Bowls in a row. But yeah, I'm super excited for NCAA this summer. I really hope it doesn't let me down. I'm sure there will be parts of it that I hate, but I'm excited to play it.
Yeah, I was just about to say the microtransactions, EA Sports. If now I don't have a console right now. If I go out and buy a console and buy NCAA football and I'm in my first off season, and I've just completed spring football, and one of my guys jumps into the transfer portal, I have to pay $5 to upgrade my NIL. I'm going to throw the new PS6 or Xbox, whatever it is, into the wall.
I bet that's how it will be structured, actually. I hadn't thought about that, but I bet there will be like an NIL budget that's like baked into skill points, and like how you perform throughout the season earns you skill points, but it's also like, hey, you're gonna end up being 2,000 VC short, and if you want to keep your starting quarterback, you're gonna have to purchase these points from the marketplace for actual dollars. Oh man, that's gonna frustrate me so bad to sit there and actually deliberate spending my money on that, because I've been there.
Yeah, I will too. Pro tip,
Madden Mobile was the first time I ever spent money on a game, and it was my mom's credit card. She was so pissed.
I think the last 2K game I bought, I fronted my guy like $20 of VC to be good immediately, because I didn't want to grind. And I wanted to play in the park. What was that? 17, 18? 2K17? Whatever it was when the park was fun. And you didn't have to like run through the whole city to get to the online twos and threes. Anyways, that's probably the first and last time I spent money on a sports game beyond buying the game. Thank you, Tad. I will take that into account. Wet Penguin says, Texas Tech has lost 5 conference games by a total of 7 runs. 3 of those by 1 and 2 by 2. Yeah, you look back at that UCF series and this TCU series, both on the road, both with real opportunities to win the series, if not sweep the series, with better defense and one more run. Like, if you take one error off the board and score one more run, this isn't a, hey, man, if you scored 17 more runs in that series against Texas, you probably would have won that series. It's no, just 2 plays different. And you're talking about a series win over a series loss. That's frustrating. It is. It is. This baseball season, if anything, has been frustrating. But you put yourself in the shoes of, let's say, a TCU who is desperate to beat Texas Tech this weekend. It's a mad world out there, and I don't think anybody has more than 10 wins in the Big 12 right now. Baseball. So we'll see what happens there. Okay, that's all I have. Coming up on 60 Minutes of Us. Final thoughts, Money?
Rangers are in a bit of a skid right now. Been trying to watch more Rangers. It's impossible to, which is really frustrating. Like, it's even gotten better in the Metroplex with the Mavs, because now they're on the local ABC station every once in a while. Obviously, now the playoffs are about to start, so... But it's just impossible to watch the Rangers. You've gotten lucky with a couple of national TV spots early in the year. That helps when you win the World Series. But man, they've almost been no hit like twice in the last week, lost like six of their last eight.
And the A's are the opposite. I think they've won six of the last eight.
Yeah.
The A's. And that included a series win against the Rangers. Bad. Bad. Yeah, Nathaniel Lowe's coming. Josh Young will be back in June.
Scherzer.
The pitching in June or July. I'm not putting a whole lot of bread in the Scherzer basket. It'll be nice to get him back, but thoughts on a Mavs matchup versus the Clippers?
Yeah, I like it. It's a tough atone, match. Atone your sins. Kawhi will be insane, like he always is. Paul George has been kind of hit or miss. I know that because he's on my fantasy team, or he was. Lost a championship game today. It was a good run for the boys, but eventually came up short. But yeah, I like the matchup. I like the opportunity to kind of, you know, put one in the coffin for them. You know, what does Westbrook do in that series? They just signed Kai Jones after his whatever happened with him the last couple of months. But other than that, like, I think he did the right thing resting guys the last couple of days, even though the results were very, very ugly. I think he lost by 50 today to the Thunder, which the Thunder are really good. So I guess that helps with it. Yeah. And then you scored like 88 against the Pistons, which was really hard to watch.
Have you scored over 90 in the last two? Going to 80, 87 against the Pistons and 88 maybe against the
Thunder? I guess not, yeah. But I really like Lively. Like, he's been an awesome piece. PJ Washington has been, like, ever since the Gafford-Washington trade, this has been a different team. Like, you look at the metrics, the Mavs are top five offensively and defensively. They are playing their best basketball when they are healthy right now. So I think it's good for Luka to get some fresh legs, get Irving some rest. Now you go into this series. I think they tip off a week from today, if I'm correct. But yeah, I'm excited about it. It'll be good basketball. Not a lot of matchups that are like jumping off the page in terms of excitement for me, but obviously I'm a Mavs fan, so that's one that intrigues me. But I think just in terms of the recent history with the two teams, it'll be a lot of fun. I think Luka should win MVP this year too, but who am I?
Luka, obviously Joker, Shy. Now that they won the one seed. Interesting. Interesting conversation there. I'm not a big NBA guy, but it's what it is. I watch the playoffs. I will tune in for the playoffs. Big hockey playoff guy. The Stars in a position to be good in the playoffs. The Mavs in a position to be good in the playoffs. The Rangers season heating up. It's going to be a fun summer. In the Metroplex, for sure.
I think I read a column in the Dallas Morning News last week about how this is like one of the most exciting times for sports in the Metroplex. And then it's just like you just got the Cowboys that are kind of like the ugly stepsister just like hanging out in the corner.
It's like that
and dragon. That's just wild.
The three-headed dragon meme that's like two really mean dragons and then the derpy one. It's tough. Yeah, best sports summer since in the DFW since what, 2011? When the Mavs won their championship and
Rangers went to the World Series.
The Stars were playing good hockey around that time, I believe. What'd they win in 2009? Maybe they won in 99, not 2009. That's a big difference. Let's see. Yeah, yeah, that was before that. They won the conference in 99. They won the Stanley Cup in 99, not 2009. Anyway, look at me knowing Stars history. Look at that. Big Stars guy. Okay, that's all I have. No poetic poems or Scandinavian prophecies. Again, Kyle out. He'll be back. Somebody asked earlier if he'd be back. He'll be back eventually. Maybe. Again, depending on what happens with Meredith Scheffler tonight. So appreciate you coming on, Money. We will be back on Wednesday for the Patreon episode, patreon.com/gamblinggauchos. You can also see Money's writings there. Kyle's writings will continue for the football season and the mailbag episode. We also have Sunday night episodes like this one every week on the Republic of Football feed, where you're listening to this. If you're on YouTube, thank you for hitting like and subscribe already. We'll see you next week. Love y'all.
Love y'all.
Ooh, sensual.